Hello, and welcome to Joel Solomon's Financial Freedom Blueprint. Joel and I are super excited that you decided to join us here in the course. Joel has a personal goal of helping at least 100,000 people become financially free, and he hopes that with this content that you're about ready to watch here in the Financial Freedom Blueprint, you'll be well on your way to not only helping you reach your goals of financial freedom, but also help Joel reach his goals as well. Joel, being a former hedge fund manager, he's going to teach you the basics. He's going to teach you about income statements, balance sheets, fundamental analysis, technical analysis, what those terms mean, and how they're so important in determining whether or not a company is going to be profitable in the future or not. He's also going to take you through his 5-step proprietary stock screen. And with that stock screen, you'll be able to determine whether or not a company has the potential to be profitable in the future, or whether or not you need to just pass on it and move on to your next opportunity. He's also going to show you and talk about his 7-step real estate screen. If becoming a real estate investor is part of your vision, then definitely hang on and pay attention when Joel steps into his 7-step real estate screen. It's super powerful. As I mentioned, Joel has a personal goal of helping at least 100,000 people become financially free. And we're super excited you're here, and we hope that you gain as much value from the message and the content that Joel is about ready to provide for you today. So if you're ready, we're ready. Let's jump into the Financial Freedom Blueprint.
Yeah, so let's talk about the stock market first overall, because you hear that term a lot. And what is the stock market? It's a place to buy stocks. It's a place where you can make a lot of money. You can speculate, you can gamble. But I recommend getting the odds in your favor. And that's what we're here to do today, is get the odds in your favor. It's where people go to buy and sell securities or stocks or shares of companies that have issued those shares. So they are public companies. There are private companies. Like my hedge fund was a private company. You couldn't publicly trade the shares of my hedge fund. It was a private company, but there are public companies that issue stock to the public. They're raising money in order to fund their business. And some have issued 1,000 shares, and some have issued 10,000, and some have issued 1,000,000, and some have issued billions. Like the largest companies in the world, Apple and Amazon and Google, have issued billions of shares. Wow. So that's the first thing. Is I say it's a market of stocks, right? The stock market is made up of a market of stocks. And a lot of people ask me, where's the stock market going? And I like to analyze and invest in individual companies, not the overall market, because I believe that you can get an edge in the overall in individual securities rather than the overall market. And people will ask me all the time, where do you think it's going? Where do you think it's going? And I can get a sense as to what's happened in the past, what's likely to happen in the future. But the odds are against you, I think, in trying to predict any one day or any one week or any one month what the overall stock market is doing. And what we're here to do today is to talk about individual companies. I'm not going to be talking about the overall stock market. So let's talk first about why you'd want to invest in a stock. So you want to invest in a stock because you can become financially free by investing in stocks. In fact, the average return has been about 10% since 1970, over the last 50 years. So if you had invested $10,000 in 1970, you would have $1.2 million today. That's the power of compounding, of 10% a year on $10,000 for 50 years. Very impressive, right? And so, yes, you can become financially free in the stock market. You can become financially free in real estate and in your business, and there are many ways. But today we're focused on the stock market. And the other reason why investing in stocks is so powerful is the investment, that 10% return, has outpaced inflation. So inflation is the increase in the price of goods and services, how much you pay for your McDonald's hamburger, if people are still going to McDonald's these days, or your Subway sandwich. that has been going up recently by more than 4% the last few years. And 2 years, well, a year and a half ago, we'll say the inflation rate was very close to 10% domestically and internationally. And so in order to beat inflation over long periods of time, you need to have returns that are higher than inflation. Now, inflation has averaged about 3%, 3.5% over the last 25 years. But even at that pace, that means that your cost of that Subway sandwich has doubled over those years. So it's gone from $5 to $10. In order to keep up with that, you need to get a return on your investments that are at least that amount. And we just commented that the stock market overall has generated a 10% return. So I recommend investing in stocks because one, you can become financially free. Two, you're beating inflation. Three, it's easy. And four, what's really great that has happened in the last 5 to 10 years is that there are no commission costs. When you're buying real estate, you have to pay a real estate broker generally, or an agent, a fee. Usually it's 2-3%. Now in the stock market, if you're buying a stock or selling a stock, there's no commissions. That is great. So that cuts into your expense, that your returns, and it had been, but now it's not. And the other thing that's great about stocks is you don't have to pay any taxes until you sell. So if you're holding for 1, 5, 10 years, you don't have to pay any taxes on the accumulation of your investments. How great is that? I teach fundamental and technical analysis. I have generally a more of a bent towards fundamental analysis. So let me explain. Fundamental analysis is when you're analyzing a company and looking at the company's income statement, how much money they're making, their balance sheet, what is the accounting measure of what they're worth, how much cash they're generating, and how is the company valued based on those measures of the actual company, what they're doing. Now, technical analysis doesn't look at the company as a company at all. All it looks at the company as a stock. And technical analysis just looks at prices of the stock price, and the volume. Those are the only two measures that when you're a technical analyst, that's what you look at. And so we'll get into that in future episodes, but right now we're going to focus on fundamental analysis. So what I wanted to do first is just define some terms, because it's important to know these terms in order for you to understand what you're doing. So let's dive into the balance sheet. And the balance sheet is where the assets and the liabilities and the equity of a company is. That's the statement where you find those items. So what are assets? So for a company like Apple, believe it or not, it has a huge amount of cash and short-term investments. Short-term meaning less than 1 year. So $194 billion in cash and short-term assets. The total assets of Apple, and this is dated, this is a couple of years ago, $317 billion. But almost $200 billion of that three, so two-thirds of that, of the total assets is in cash and investments less than 1 year. Now, stocks are a separate category, and they don't invest in stocks. So it's just short-term investments, like they're buying a treasury, the government issues short-term notes or bills, 3 months, 1 month. So the government's borrowing money from you and me all day, every day. And Apple's bought some of those treasury bills and treasury notes that mature in a month or 3 months or 6 months. And they're considered very low risk, and they're getting a small return of 2 or 3 or 4%. So that's where most of the assets are of Apple. Most people don't know that. It's not, they also have, property and plants and their iPads that haven't sold yet, and their iPhones and their AirPods that haven't sold yet. Those are held as well as accounts receivable. But all of that only adds to another $100 billion. So it's really interesting that a company like Apple, and if you look at a lot of technology companies, most of their assets are in cash and short-term investments. So those are assets. If you look at a financial company like an insurance company or a bank, which is my specialty, financial companies, when I had my hedge fund, we only invested in financial stocks. And so you mentioned in 2008, the market was down 40%. Financial companies were down 57%. And we managed to make a little bit of money in 2008. And we were only investing in those companies that were going down a ton. Now we were hedged. So, you know, let me for a second explain hedge funds. Hedge funds, there's 1,000 different types of hedge funds. My hedge fund was a stock fund and a bond fund, but we mostly invested in 2008, it was only stocks. And we were betting that some stocks were going to go up and other stocks were going to go down. So we were hedged a bit, right? So we should go down less than the overall market when the market goes down. That's the idea of the hedge. And we should go up less than the market goes up when the market goes up. So that's a hedge fund. And so I was investing mostly in insurance companies and asset management companies, like mutual fund companies in 2008. And these companies have other assets like stocks, like bonds, long-term bonds, long-term stocks, because they're trying to match the liabilities that they have to pay out. So insurance companies have to pay out claims. If you get into a car accident or something happens to your home, they have to pay a claim. And so for a property or a casualty insurance company, usually a lot of the claims are short. They have to pay them in a year. So they're investing a lot in bonds. But in life insurance companies, you buy a life insurance policy, you may buy it, you know, right now you're going to live another 30 years. That policy is going to stick around for 30 years. They have to have long-term assets. So they buy long-term bonds and stocks. And so on the balance sheet, you'll see investments. Most of insurance companies' assets are in investments long-term. Now, Apple, we saw most of it's in investments too, but it's short-term. So let's continue with the balance sheet and talk about liabilities. I started talking a little bit about liabilities. So for Apple, for example, their biggest liability is debt. Despite the fact that they don't really need to borrow money, it's interesting that the largest companies in the world will borrow when they can at very low interest rates. So a couple of years ago, when interest rates were 1 or 2 or 3%, Apple could borrow all day long at 2%. And they, 2 years ago on this balance sheet that I'm looking at, it has $122 billion of debt. And that debt could be 30 years, it could be 10 years. You know, some people will lend money to Apple and they'll issue debt for 50 years. So $122 billion of their 245, almost 50% of their liabilities is just debt that they've issued. And so think about it as an individual. A lot of people think debt's bad. And I talk about in part two, chapter one, in the 9 Money Rules Millionaires Use, the chapter title is credit good or bad? And it depends. For Apple, it's great to borrow at 2% and then sell, you know, an iPad or iPhone and generate a 10 or 20% return on that. They'll do that all day long. That spread is huge. So if you are an individual can borrow at 2 or 3% or nowadays 4 or 5 and then invest in the stock market, which some of my colleagues did, I'm not saying to leverage yourself, but some of my colleagues did at Citi when things looked really, really bad. They said, well, if the world's ending, then we got a lot more problems. We're gonna borrow from our credit card. I'm not saying do this, but they were able to borrow from their credit card at 15% and get 50 to 100% returns and then pay the credit card borrowings back within 3 or 6 months. So credit's only bad if you're borrowing at a rate that's higher than you can earn. And so Apple knows it's good to borrow when rates are low. They may not be borrowing as much, say, as they did 2 or 3 years ago, because rates have gone up a lot, but 50% of their liabilities is in debt. And then the other liabilities are, you know, the accounts that they have to you know, their vendors that they have to pay, the component parts of the phones, the iPads, the earbuds, and so on, and then all the other products that they're making. So that's the, and then let's finish up the balance sheet here, which, so what's most important about the balance sheet is assets minus liabilities. That's a company's shareholders' equity. Some people call it SHE, shareholders, S-H-E, shareholders' equity. And that's the accounting value of the company. And the accounting value of the company is just what the accountants, based on all their generally accepted accounting principles, say is the equity of the company. And the book value of the company, we'll get into ratios probably next time. The book value of the company is just that equity, shareholders' equity, assets minus liabilities, divided by the outstanding shares. And so that's an accounting measure of what is a company worth. When you hear book value, that's the accountant saying, okay, this company is worth. So if Apple's assets minus liabilities 2 years ago was $72 billion, that's what Apple is worth from the accountant's point of view. Now, today and back then, Apple was worth a lot more than that. And we can get into why next time, I think. But you know, nowadays, Apple's worth over $2 trillion. And its equity hasn't gone up by 100 times. So, and there's a reason why that differential is large. So that's the balance sheet.